What is happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I got a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a mega hip-hop producer who's produced tracks for the biggest names in hip-hop, man. From Notorious B.I.G. to Tupac to Craig Mack to Busta Rhymes and LL Cool J. Please put your hands together and welcome mega hip-hop producer Easy Mo B.
All right.
What's happening, Easy?
What's going on?
Oh, man, dude. Man, just inspired to have you here, man. It's truly an honor, dude. And, you know, again, I'm a huge fan of your production. I've been following your tracks, man, for a while. And from one producer to another, man, I got to take my hat off to you. You know, I just felt at the time when your tracks really hit the scene, you know, hip-hop was in a transition of other genres from other, you know, sides of the states and different regions bringing their sound in, man. And I just felt that your tracks out of everybody's were really just standing out and just really making a name for themselves, man. And again, man, you're just killing it, man.
I appreciate it, man.
You know, Easy, the two tracks, man, that I want to talk about before we get into some other discussions, man, is one of my hip-hop tracks of all time, Flavor in the Ear with Craig Mack, and Biggie Smalls, man, Going Back to Cali. Those two tracks right there, dude, really change how I viewed hip-hop and the direction how I would really compose hip-hop. Because, again...
What's interesting is that you picked out Going Back to Cali because, you know, that's on the more commercial/radio friendly side, as opposed to, rather compared to a lot of the stuff that I've done. But if you're a producer, so you probably know, if you really, really listen to that record, the sample is more bounce to the ounce. If you really listen to that record, people will realize, they will say, man, he put some work in just to do that beat.
Right, and this is, man, again, this is back in 96, 97. Chopping samples was kind of like somewhat new to the game. You know, it wasn't as commercialized as it is now. And the way you chop that sample is timeless. That track will come on right now in the club, Easy, man. It would tear it up, man. You're on the floor. You know what I mean? And yeah, man, it's just the way you arranged it, the drum samples, the choice of just the arrangement is just phenomenal, dude. It's crazy.
I had a couple of people that asked me, yo, man, did you have the master? I was like, come on, man.
Right. You know, I want to back up a little bit, Easy, because a lot of your ideas and a lot of your arrangements has to come from somewhere. Give me some descriptions and a little bit of influences. You know, who inspired you to get into production and who are you pulling from to really cultivate your own sound?
Okay, well, it really all started with, you know, my father just having a lot of records. He was a man of many records, from gospel to funk, soul, blues, whatever. I'm growing up and I'm watching hip-hop just evolve from its beginning in the back park in my projects out in Brooklyn. You know, they had the thing going on uptown, but out in Brooklyn, we had the same thing going on. So I'm watching DJs go from one to two on the one and twos on the turntable, taking the same break and, you know, extending it. That's where we get the loop from, basically, and as a part of the job for samplers today. But then after samplers had came out, it's like I already knew what I wanted to do. Like, a lot of things I would just like sit around and just dream them up in my head.
Right.
That's how I come up with stuff. Like, I don't know, I picture them like decorations. Like, I see certain things hanging
right
in my head, and a beat to me is like a Christmas tree, like you gotta decorate it. You know what I mean?
Right, definitely.
With all of the trimmings, and the tree is the meat, but you know, you have to decorate it.
Right, definitely. And you had a lot of ear candy to your tracks, man. Seriously, you're definitely decorating them tracks.
The track that best describes what I just talked about, it's a lot of tracks that I did. A lot of people always say Flavor in Your Ear, but one of my favorites is Everything Remains Raw, Busta Rhymes.
Busta Rhymes, okay. Now, yeah, what's interesting about that track, man, I would say there's a certain sound. I can't describe the sounds, man. You must have really twisted it up because it's not a factory sound. I don't know if it's a sample, but pretty much the whole ride of the track, there's like a little sign patch or pad in the background, and it goes up and down. There's like you're like your half step between them, between the two notes.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All that stuff, you know, it all matters. And see, I think like a band, or I guess like a orchestra, you know, that would get together in the studio and put together stuff. You have your drums, you have your bass, you know, the rhythm, and you have your string section, you have percussion, you got all these different things happening, you know. It was my intention to bring that whole thing to hip-hop production, more than just making a beat, you know, like, let's make music. And earlier, also, too, so that I can completely answer your question, some of my heaviest influences, well, number one at the top of the game that really, really pushed me over the edge to say, all right, okay, that's it, I want to do it, is Marley Marl.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary.
Oh, yeah.
Marley Marl, man. He's produced so many hits that people are really unaware of, man. He's been on the game since the 80s, killing it. You know what I mean? And, yeah, dude, I could definitely see that. Definitely. Yeah.
So, Marley Marl, also Howie T, Herbie Lovebug, Azor. Wow.
Wow. You're going back, man.
And for all of the people who didn't know that he was making beats, or how many beats he has even made, but said G from the Ultra Magnetic, we ain't even gonna call out a lot of the beats that he's done. A couple of people will get mad if we expose that he really was the one that did the track. And the legendary Jazzy J.
Yes, sir. Jazzy J.
Yeah, Jazzy J was found to be like one of the early producers. As a matter of fact, he produced the first Def Jam record, which was Pete LaRocque, It's Yours.
Wow.
I mean, I still have the 12-inch. Look on it. It says Def Jam 001, meaning, you know, record one.
Right.
So, going all the way back to a Jazzy J up to Marley Marl. And then, as far as music, pre-recorded music and albums that was already released, some of my heaviest influences is Curtis Blow. I'm sorry, not Curtis Blow. Well, he's an influence too.
Right.
And believe it or not, Curtis Blow was a producer.
Right.
But I meant to say Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, Curtis Mayfield. Oh, yeah, man. That's a legend.
And, you know, not to just brush off Curtis Blow, you know, that's kind of interesting that came out by mistake and I mentioned him. You know, Curtis Blow was a producer too back then.
He was. He produced a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know he had his hand in Sucker MCs and It's Like That.
Right.
Run DMC. And I said Curtis Mayfield and, oh man, Isaac Hayes.
Yes.
See, you would never ever think that, as far as influence, you would never think that, you know, a hip-hop producer that be drawing from cats like that, but, oh, man, I drew heavily from him, you know, just sitting back and listening to them arrangements.
Right.
First of all, I was always fascinated by anything that had the Barqués playing on it.
Oh, wow, and,
yeah, and the Barqués back in the early 70s on Stax Records, that was like kind of like the house band. Maybe not all the time, but for a majority of the stuff that was coming out on Stax.
Yeah.
And they ended up being like basically Otis Redding, much earlier on, Otis Redding's band. And then later on, Isaac Hayes, he became fascinated with him. And
right.
It's just one of the most simplest, funky, clean cut sounds that I ever heard before, man.
Wow.
And I always tried to achieve that when I made my beats. So you probably hear a little bit of that in the flavor in your ear.
Yeah.
You know,
stuff you did for Biggie. I think you put a little bit from Isaac on a couple of Biggie tracks too, just from my ear. Walk On By. Yeah.
Walk no
yeah.
doubt.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, man, it's, again, who would have thought at that time to use those samples that way? You know what I mean? It's been done now over repeatedly, but that foundation came from Easy Mo B. I just want everybody who's listening to know that. So, you know, I just had to put that out, Easy.
Yeah, no doubt. So So, yeah, I drew heavily from Curtis Mayfield and still continue to. Isaac Hayes. I'm fascinated, believe it or not, also with Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff, the entire Philly collection. Another formula, one of those same formulas, was done by Barry White. I used to call it the Funky Orchestra.
Okay.
Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, it was quite amazing with MFSB under the direction of Gamble and Huff. Mm-hmm. And then also, too, Barry White, you know, what they were doing with orchestras at the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you understood that these big string sections was happening, and you had all these different guitarists and musicians gathered together in the studio, but it just made it so funky, man.
It is. A lot of it too, man. You know, I'm a musician, man. You know, so I definitely encourage everybody to, you know, learn the craft, man. It just really develops your skill, really develops your ear to really, you know, capture that live sound that a lot of these guys are sampling and really bring it in. You know what I mean? So it's just playing with these different musicians. You guys are bouncing off chord progressions and different arrangements and rhythm sections back and forth to each other. You're going to pick up something. So, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, and I always loved anything close to a live sound or the sound of real instruments. So, you know, a lot of the synthesized type drum catalogs and a lot of that different kind of stuff. By the way, I don't have any drum libraries or any of that. All of my sounds always came from records.
Yeah, drums. Right, I was going to ask you that, man.
Yeah, I have no drum libraries. I never used them. Never bought them.
So you just drop everything from vinyls.
I always come from scratch when I'm doing something. First, I like to find out the sample, the music, or even, to that matter, the loop that I'm going to be working with. Then I listen to, after I get the loop and the main music, then I sit back and I try to get a feel for what kind of timbre of drums would go with that. You know, because you're a producer, you know that. You would know, like, certain drums just don't go with everything.
No, it doesn't, man. A lot of drums are, depends on the sound. A lot of the snares, they're too sustained, or sometimes they're just not thick enough. It may be good for maybe an overtone or maybe a double stack, but yeah, you know, it's the two got to work together. I can't have a quick kick and a long, you know, sustained snare, and it's too tangy and it's too bright. It's not thick enough. So yeah, I'm real picky when it comes to drums. So I agree with you.
Yep. And I play drums too, so okay. I know how drums is supposed to sound.
Right. Now, have you sampled any acoustic drums in your library at all, from like live samples or?
There's been a couple along the way. I experimented with stuff like that, but for the most part, like, all of the drum sounds came from records, and I always knew how I wanted to play my drums because I was playing drums since a little boy in church, like, you know, 12 years old. This is around the same time that I got on the turntables. Okay. You know, that's something a lot of other people don't know also too, is Easy Mo B is a DJ. I started as a DJ and evolved into a producer.
Wow. But again, having that ear, man.
Yeah, and then my father, he passed that whole thing. Band of many records. My basement is sick, man. It's ridiculous. I don't even know where to put them no more.
Wow. Now, you talked about you sampled quite a bit, Easy. I want to ask, what tools did you use back in the day? Because you and I both come from an analog world, man, and, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, samplers were very limited, and I'm sure you were already tracking back then. What were your tools back then, and what did you transition to now with the DAW systems?
When I first came in, first of all, the first thing that I ever did, for those who don't know, that was released commercially, was Big Daddy Kane on his second album, It's a Big Daddy Thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Call of Mr. Welfare, and wow, Another Victory. And those tracks, they were done in the studio. believe it or not, those joints were done on either the Synclavier. Matter of fact, I believe it was the Synclavier.
Wow.
What you probably don't know is a lot of those beats on the it's a Big Daddy thing, Big Daddy Kane's second album. A lot of those beats was done on the Synclavier.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Like the ones that was produced by Kane, like Warm It Up Kane and all that stuff. Yeah, he did that on the Synclavier. But I did those joints live then, and the reason why I did them live on the spot in the studio is because I didn't have the equipment yet.
Okay.
I'll never forget it. He gave me $3,000 for two tracks, $1,500 apiece.
Wow.
To this day, right now, that would be an insult to me. But,
right. You know, hey, start out, man.
But that was the first money I ever made, and he gave me that check, that money. Yo, man, I went straight to 48th Street, to Sam Ash.
Sam Ash.
And bought the SP-1200.
Oh, the EMU SP-12. Yeah, that's a real popular sampler workstation. A lot of guys still use that till this day over the MPCs.
Yeah, I bought the SP-1200. And then much later on, I added on, a couple of months later, I added on a Akai S950.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Now, what you won't believe is, guess what? I'm still using that same equipment to this day.
Really? So you haven't converted any of the software since, or MPCs or anything, or?
Well, I got. You know what I bought recently? I bought an MPC 5000, and I'm playing around, experimenting with that. I want to begin to use that, and what I want to do is, I would love to find the modern day digital machine, that sampling drum machine that I feel most comfortable with, and that I can bring everything that I always did to that machine. So I believe that the 5000 is going to be it.
Okay.
Yeah. But you remember we were just talking about going back to Cali.
Yeah.
That's a nice, clean cut, crispy sounding beat, right?
Yes, sir.
That's the SP-1200, man, and the 950.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what was your signal chain on those? What type of signal chain? I know you weren't just running those line level. You had to been going through some sort of pre to get that thickness, man. What did you run in it?
Well, the beats was saved to the 3.5-inch micro floppy disk. And in the studio, they rented the SP-1200 and the 950 for me.
Okay.
So those was waiting for me there when I got there. Usually, that's what I used to like to do. Kind of bring my disc into the studio, and on the rented SP-1200 and 950, I come in, work is already done, pop them right in, load them up, track, boom, we good.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, and of course, back then it was tape machines.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's real, like I said, man, it was just a real thick sound, man. It's, you know, real crisp. You know, a lot of the like your Flavor in the Ear and some of the other tracks you did was a little bit more dirty, a little more edgy, but yeah, going back to Cal's probably the cleanest one I've heard. You know, did you lay the synths and stuff over that too, or is that
you talking about the breath?
Yeah.
Oh, that I used the 950 to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it's something real interesting that I've always done. You got a lot of cats that's just starting to do that, or you know, they might be just touching on that whole concept. But as far back as the early 90s, man, I've been what I call playing samples.
Sure.
For the longest, like I play them like they're an instrument. You understand?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you have a whole bunch of different things going on, and harmonically, everything is in tune. You know, I got some music going on, and a lot of times it's not a loop. You got a multifaceted prism.
Right.
Of things, bunch of original things going on, and, you know, there's music. Like you talked about in that Everything Remains Raw beat, that string part or whatever that kept rising up right. And down, he was talking about anything from keys, pads, like roads, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
They all make their way into my 1,200.
No, seriously, it's you definitely develop what I call a sonic signature that certain producers that I hear, it's not the melodies that are same. There's certain elements and certain ear candies and certain sounds that they use are giving that sonic signature that's going to give them that stamp. Like, I know your tracks, man. That's the Easy Mobi track, man. There's certain things I feel that you use, and it, you know, it's never duplicated, man. And the stuff that you do, it's going to be real hard for somebody to really, really try to mimic your style and sound. So, you know, that's why I just feel that, you know, you're a pioneer and innovator when it comes to hip-hop production, man. Definitely put East Coast on the map, in my opinion.
And another signature thing about my production that a lot of people always said was my bass, that heavy stuff.
Yeah, you're heavy. Yeah, that, man, that sub bass is crushing the speakers, man.
Well, I got that. I feel like I learned that from Marley. Remember Biz Markie, I Write the Songs?
Yep, mm-hmm.
Well, he had the Papa Was 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, on a Sirius system that can handle it?
Yeah.
Oh, back to the days of the projects, like, the right Jeep would go by with a kicker box in the back of their Jeep.
You already knew what song they were playing.
Oh, man, like, to me, Marley just used to achieve some of the deepest, richest bass that I had ever heard in hip-hop. And by the time that he had gotten to Mama Said Knock You Out album, by then he had Marley's House of Hits studio, and he had Frank Heller as his like normal, regular engineer. Frank Heller really came from Unique, which is a studio that I did a lot of stuff in too. You know, I did like most of the majority of the stuff that I've done, I did it in Unique right there. But anyway, he snatched up Frank Heller and with his House of Hits studio. And if you listen on, okay, like what was the LL joint? You can feel the power of God. You hear the bass in that record, man. It would just be rumbling, man.
Right.
And I'm listening at this dude. Sometimes he would make records just rumble. And you would think that he had some 808 under there. Marley is one of the first producers that I ever heard that just, he achieved that 808 bass effect without even having an 808 in there. You know when you got the 808 tuned real, real low, which is something that's real popular in a lot of the down south tracks right now. Like
right.
It's almost to the point where it's so low.
It's almost on, you know, audible. You like, gotta hear it. You gotta feel it more or less than you can hear it.
Yeah, you call that kind of stuff like dog frequencies. You might not hear it, but right. You can feel it.
Right. Yeah.
I watched him early on achieve things like that, and I just used to sit back and just be like, man, I want my stuff to sound like that.
Right. A lot of that, too, man. There's a lot of these guys, and like Marley, and I'm pretty sure, man, these guys using top-of-the-line pre's on their path, their signal path, and, you know, just that EQing, running that through an SSL, that hot signal. That stuff makes a major difference in recordings. Like, when I used to run my stuff flat to line level, it was cool, it was clean, balanced, but when I started running everything through pre's, is really when my sound really started defining, really started standing out. The bottom end started rounding off and became more thicker and creamier, in my opinion, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, us, and when I say us, I can say that because, you know, you're a producer too. Us as sound connoisseurs, you know, it's like all of that type of stuff that really, really makes a difference. And it matters. And a lot of the records that I listen to today, I just wish that a lot of the producers and a lot of the music makers would make sure that a lot of that type of stuff matters. Because, you know, a lot of times it's not even what you use or what sample you have or what music it is that you actually got going on in your record. You know, there's a whole lot of records that, for the sample, like I just said, for the music that's in the record, I don't even like the music. I don't even like the sample or whatever it is.
Right.
But sonically, do you know that you can achieve sonically a record to the point you get it sonically sounding so good that maybe the sample is not good, it's not that interesting, maybe the music is kind of corny, but sonically, if that record bangs, do you know people will like that?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I know a lot of songs that were mixed so well, it's a bad song, but it's a good mix, man.
Because you know, at the bottom of the at the end of the day, the bottom line is when you go in the club, it's all about the way that joint hits the speakers, man.
It is.
It's all about how that joint hits the speakers. And I got things that I witnessed and that I kept with me from a long time ago, being out in the park and watching the neighborhood DJs jam. They're bringing out the big ass kickers, those big black bass bottoms.
Oh, yeah.
The stuff that... And I used to listen to breakbeats being cut up. And I hear these records, they sound a certain way over the speakers. So just being able to experience that kind of stuff right there, by the time you get to be your own producer, your own music maker one day, you know how you want your stuff to sound.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, I got 4 different reference systems I listen to my stuff on, man. It's cool to listen to the studio, but not everybody's got my type of monitors where it's going to sound great. You know what I mean? So you got to go on, sometimes you got to go on these cheap systems and take it to the car, take it, if you have access to a club, man, try to put on a PA system, see how it, you know, because a lot of times you'll lose that mid-range and it's too beefy on the bottom end. And it's like, ooh, I got to go back and, you know, bring them lows down a little bit. But, you know, having those different reference systems to listen to your stuff really helps, you know, when you're trying to balance that mix.
And I want to shout out and thank him, because he taught me a lot and I learned a lot just working with him over the years. Die Hard to this day, to the end, my engineer Eric Lynch. You know, he did so much with me. He recorded the entire Miles Davis album with me. The only song that he didn't do was D'Anthony Johnson. He did Doobop. But for the most part, that whole album, he was there for things I did with Busta Rhymes, different other tracks. And, oh, man, you know, being able to have a good engineer, that helps, too.
Oh, yeah. Man. That producer and that engineer relationship definitely has to be together, because sometimes as a producer, if you don't have the experience mixing, you got to find some way to bring out your audio vision to life. And you know, that engineer who's a really good listener, you guys should be able to communicate and build that relationship. He knows what you want sonically after working with you for so many projects. I'm pretty sure you guys got an excellent relationship, and that's why you're bringing out great work. So yeah, I definitely hear you, man.
And on that note, when you talk about stuff like that, let's talk about home studios just for a quick second.
You sure can. You have
a lot of immaculate producers. They're great producers. But dog, stay away from mixing. If producing is your expertise, but mixing is something that, you know, in that area is something more left to be desired, you need some help on it, go get that help, man. Because I'm hearing that a lot of times too. You know, a lot of people, they got home studios and they're good producers, but the records just need like a better mix.
Yeah, that's real common, especially starting out. You know, because like as engineering takes time. I mean, I can't stress that enough. You know, it's one thing to have ability to work a stereo. Yeah, you know what sounds good, but you're listening to mixes that are already mixed, so it's going to sound good in a stereo. But when you get those individual files and you have to really bring that to life yourself, man, you can get lost in the mix really easy for a couple of years. You know, not having that ear, the right monitors, and just really knowing how to balance different frequencies. So, man, it's a skill that takes time, and I definitely agree with you, man. Pay somebody to mix your stuff and sit down with them and watch what they're doing. Yeah.
Like you said, you have 4 different reference monitors that you run your music through, that you listen to before you can say you're satisfied with it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, my engineer, Eric Lynch, I mean, that is stuff like that. Him, and he's not the only engineer that I worked with in my time. I worked with a whole lot of different engineers. So, and I watched them, man, and the different things that I learned, like what you were saying about the monitors and stuff. Like Eric Lynch, I would work with him. He would listen to him on the NS10s, right? Mm-hmm. We would listen to it on the NS10s. Then we would listen to it on, like, slightly bigger monitors, the Tannoys. Then he'd take it up in the wall on the with the two big speakers in the wall. And then, after all of that, he had, like, I don't know, like, some kind of, like, I don't know, maybe something close to a transistor radio.
Okay.
That type of small speaker system.
Mm-hmm.
And he would make me listen to these records on the little small transistor radio type speaker system.
Oh, yeah.
And this is because when you're sitting back and you're listening in a to a transistor radio or a small radio, it doesn't have all of the bass, and you're still supposed to be able to get all of those frequencies. You're supposed to still be able to distinguish bass, mids, highs, all of that.
Exactly.
So that was brought to mind, you know, when you spoke about the monitors and stuff. So much different stuff over the years that I learned, man, just being around other producers and engineers and stuff. You know, Marley Marl, to bring him up again, he is, to me, the perfect combination of a producer / engineer. Everybody doesn't just do it all right together in one, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to think, this dude was engineering records since his apartment in the Queensbridge Projects.
Yeah, right.
So he know what he doing.
Oh, no, he's a legend. Again, man, like I say, everyone at one point in time, and not everybody was spoiled, you know, driving a Ferrari or, you know, running an SSL board, you know, of the first studio project. A lot of these guys had to start from the beginning and really try to know and utilize what they had and make the best out of it. And over time, you'll grow with your equipment, you know. So Marley Marl and a lot of these other guys, Teddy Riley is another one, man. I'm a huge Teddy Riley fan, and
I'm influenced heavily by Teddy also too.
Oh, really?
yeah man.
So he's another guy, man, that I really focused on my engineering, because, you know, as a producer, he always felt that, man, the two go hand in hand together. You know, what better way to shape your sound if it's coming right out of your head? So just take the extra time and really learn the tools, really start listening to what's going on within the mix, and, you know, develop your sound that way. So yeah, I hear you, man.
Okay, if there was something that I got from Teddy, if there was anything I took from Teddy, is that, man, your stuff has to be tight.
Yes.
Like airtight. I would listen to him sample drums and stuff like that. And he would drum stuff up on top with the kicks and snares and all of that. And it's like everything would always be so tight, barely any. You wouldn't hear, like, stuff flamming and stuff. What I mean by that is, like, you know, when you get that double effect, when stuff is not sitting right on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
Your kicks and snares are not properly aligned with the drums and the sample.
Right.
So I picked up stuff like that from him. If there's anything I got from him, was that his stuff had to be, like, tight.
Right.
Yeah, sonically tight. And then Marley, I just got the raw funky from him.
No doubt, man. You know, Easy, when you're composing your tracks, man, you've done so many tracks for everybody. How do you usually compose, man? Do you get the vocals and you kind of have a bass foundation of the track and they lay the vocals over it and it's a wrap from there, or do you usually go back and recreate over it? Because what I do is I'll have a foundation beat laid for my artist or MC. They'll lay the vocals down, 80% of their vocals, and I usually go back and strip the music over, man, and just really create around them, because at that point I feel like I can really define that sound for that artist I'm working with and give them their own identity. I mean, because a lot of your tracks don't sound the same, so I just wanted to see if you do the same thing I do.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You usually come with a skeleton.
Yeah.
Not too much. You just come with a satisfactory skeleton, something that they're happy enough to do vocals with, and then after your vocals are laid on top, then you feel like whatever else you come and add to that is kind of complementing the vocals.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes you can do that, and then sometimes it depends. you can do it, you know, in the way of the formula that you just described right there that you have. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you can just come with a track that's completely finished in your eyes. It's finished. And somebody comes along and just puts whatever they put to it in.
Right.
See, because I totally understand what you're saying. I totally understand that, because everything remains raw. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it now. When I did that with Busta Rhymes, it was somewhat a skeleton.
Okay.
And then after he started, you know, he said, "That's only 5 years left." And he real dramatic with his vocals and stuff.
Yeah.
After he laid his vocals, I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, definitely got to decorate this Christmas tree."
Right. Because you're getting inspired from their deliverance. Yeah, man. I hear you.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you're kind of right. And as a producer, as a music producer, period. It's our job to make people sound good. And the reason why I said music producer, not just hip hop, R&B, because I work with Wu-Tang, work with Big Daddy Kane, Biggie, Tupac, people like that, just as well as Alicia Keys. I work with Miles Davis. I mean, come on, man. Miles Davis on his horn over my beats. Like, how do you engineer that?
Right. That's a different project right there, man.
Yeah, this time, the voice on my beats was his horn.
Wow.
So that was a delicate mixing process, too.
Right.
When it came time to mix that down.
You know, also, man, I want to talk about your new position as head producer with Black Box Enterprises, man. Give me some information of how and how that collaboration started and where it's at now.
Well, big shout to my partner, Damon Jackson. This is like a cumulative effort on the both of our parts of just wanting to start a movement, wanting to start a label. And what it is when he says head producer, actually right now I'm the only producer. That's just a title, just some title that he created. I noticed that. See, this is Damon's fault right now. He created the title. But there is no other producer right now. But I do intend to create a production camp.
Okay.
And Easy Mo B has never ever done that before, but I would love to put together like a roster of producers. One of them for sure that I know is going to be with us is my brother. You probably didn't know that he was my brother. I'm talking about LG, or you might know him better as LG Experience. He produced the entire LL Scratch album.
Yeah, oh wow. Yeah, I didn't know that, man.
Where My Homies, I'll Take Her, featuring Brian McKnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like when My Homies came out, a lot of people thought that I did that because it had that certain sound. I was like, nah, that's my brother.
Right. There you go, man. Giving him props.
Well, you know, it's still family. So, yeah, I'm happy about the Black Box thing. I think it's nice when you got a situation of your own where you can feel free, have some autonomy to create and come up with things and, you know, just feel real, real comfortable, not feel restricted about what you're doing. And in the Black Box record situation, it gives me that kind of control. You know, I'm happy, I'm excited in 2010 to start putting out records. The first record that I intend to put out is a compilation album. And right now it's untitled. That's going to be crazy because people haven't heard Easy Mo B in a long time. You're going to hear like the same Easy Mo B, just probably like to about the third power.
That's good though, man. We need that, man. You need to, man. This, you know, the stuff that you did back then, I can only imagine where you're at right now, man. I'm sure you've developed into a whole nother beast. So, you know, I can't wait to hear what you got coming out, man. You know?
Yeah, I want to master that 5,000, man.
Right.
Cause
yeah.
I want to incorporate that into, you know, the new Easy Mo B, you know.
Right. Well, Easy, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, brother. Man, don't be a stranger to you. Always got a spot here at the Producers Corner, man. I would love to have you back, man. Talk about your new endeavors and chop it up with you again with your new projects, dude.
All right.
Talk to you later, dude.
Peace.
Thanks. And shout out to Easy Mo B for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate him. The knowledge and the experience that he shared, man. His methods of production, his arrangement and the gear, man. I always talk about that ear. You know, having that mature ear for production is important, because then you're able to separate yourself from the expected compositions that people hear a lot of times on the radio and songs. Oh, I've heard that tune before. I mean, it's something that will get you outside of the box and really get your mind to be more innovative and more creative with your compositions and arrangements. And, you know, he talked a little bit about, you know, the equipment that he uses. You know, he doesn't use a whole lot of the new equipment. I mean, he's really sticking to his own format that works for Easy. You know what I mean? And that's where he can really just focus in to stay in his zone, because the tools that he uses is working for him. And these are standard Pro Audio tools, but again, it's not the tools that you use, man. It's the driver behind the tools that's really making the tools stand out and work for you. So again, find that path of good studio work ethic and find a system and use a system that's going to work for your work habits in the studio. You know, it's cool to pull, you know, certain things from people and bring it to your own world of production. But to start somewhere because someone else is using it, it's a good start. But you know, you're not sure if that's going to be your own ways of production, because you're a different creator than the next person. So everyone's got their own thought process. Similar tips and tools, but just maybe different methods of deliverance. So again, man, that experience that he shared, man, was really beneficial for everybody. I hope everybody was really listening and taking notes, man, because it was a lot of good information out there for everybody to pick up on. And for those of you that like to contact me for questions and suggestions, hit me up at my email, spud2tight@gmail.com. And you can also hit my website up for all my past interviews and a couple of forums I have posted on there for a recording, composition questions, and just basic music journal questions. And that's www.spud2tight.ning.com. And again, I want to thank everybody for joining in and listening. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.